are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Welcome to Serious Growth Podcast, where the truth is told. On today's show, we have David Henry. David, thanks for coming on. How are you?
All good, man. Good to be here.
Yeah, that's good. Hey, listen, on your bio, the first thing that stood out for me was I saw that you, Mr. Olympia winner in 2008. Just to be clear, did you win the show or were you?
Yep.
Oh, is that right? 2000. Yep. Who are the guys that were competing back then with you?
Oh, shit. Flex, I mean, Lewis. This is the 202. We're talking about the 202.
Oh, 202. I'm looking at 208 here. 2008. Oh, 202 winner. Okay, yeah. So who was top three or top five?
Me, Flex Lewis, Kevin English.
Yeah. And then it says here that you competed in 12 shows prior to that, leading up to that. Is that right?
No. 12 shows title, 12 titles total.
Oh, I see. And I'm always curious how people get into the sport of bodybuilding. Were you an athlete before you got into bodybuilding?
No, athlete itself, yeah. I was track and field in high school. That was about it.
Yeah. So then how did bodybuilding find you, or did you find bodybuilding?
Probably a combination of the two. I think based on my build, I was approached by one of my mom's friends and stuff, and he thought I should get in the gym and start training and things. And that was after, I think I was 18 at the time. Yeah. But before that, I just jumped on stage because somebody thought I should just do the Lacan Classic, and I did, took third, and a lightweight novice, and then just went about being my business. And then 18, my mom's friend started training me in the gym, or attempting to train me. Yeah. But it was to me, it was a learning experience and a disaster all at once, just because what the old school mentality was of training and stuff like that, my young body, untrained, couldn't handle. So I was sore all the time, and just like this shouldn't feel like this, you know?
Yeah, too intense at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is in Texas, I assume?
Yeah.
Okay. And so did somebody actually, I mean, did you eventually have a coach, or did you just learn this on your own?
No, I never had a coach. I hadn't coached until I was a pro from that point. And the previous to that was just naturally reading Flex Magazine and all the other magazines like most people have done at those times. And then it wasn't until after I deployed, came back from deployment after 9/11. Then I had a coach, Rich Daugherty, from Beverly International. So I used the Beverly International nutrition diet and coaching, if you will, for Rich Daugherty for probably three years or so.
Mm-hmm. So when you started at 18, what was your first competition then after that when you started training?
I didn't compete again until I joined the military. And then it was the Mr. Osan in 1998. Was Mr. Osan, and I'd won that, won the most muscular, and that's when I pretty much was like, okay, I probably can do this. So got back home after that, started training. That's what I thought was serious. And yeah, you know, making a little bit of progress and stuff like that, but then I pretty much stopped, man. And then until after 9/11, and once 9/11 hit, I the gears changed, because then I got hold of Rich Daugherty again, and everything started going uphill from there, or down uphill from there. And, you know, is getting better as far as if you want to go ahead and
relate to that. How long were you in the Air Force?
20 years.
20 years. Mm-hmm. That must have changed your life in a way.
No, I mean it does, just because that's what you know. You know, you adapt and stuff to a certain, you know, strict things and way to do stuff. And that was not you know, nothing too extravagant, but it is what it is on that. And I have a soft spot in my heart for the people that have retired, not so much for those that said, oh, I served my country. But that's been a controversial point too. But
did you have a, were you pretty disciplined before you went into the service, or did that?
No, make not
you
at
more,
all.
So that the service, did that help you become more disciplined, you think?
Oh yeah. I mean, you got to, you either do or you get kicked out.
I would think so.
You go to jail. So for those that know and been in, you know, there's stuff that you just have to do. And if you don't like being told what to do and how to do it, then the military branches are not for you. Yeah. And I'd rather not see you in them either.
Yeah. Cause I know, like me being an athlete, that was, I had the discipline already going in. When bodybuilding found me, then I already had that, you know, background in athletics, a lot of years of it. And the reason why I got into the sport of bodybuilding was because I was severely out of shape at the age of 27 or 25, and which was odd because I was always an athlete and I was always in shape. And I was like, okay, now what? You know, and then that's how I stumbled into weightlifting, actually, because we never did in the athletics that I played in. We back then, believe it or not, they didn't want you in the weight room if you were a specialty player, you know, quarterback, receiver, that kind of thing. So yeah. to learn that was a whole different, you know, I did like what you did, all the magazines and stuff like that. And you just eventually, if you stick with it, you start kind of figuring it out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But, so what was the first competition that you did? Which one was that one? And how much did you weigh?
The first comp I did was a 16, and that was the Lackland Classic. I think I weighed 145 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How much you weigh
so,
now?
Well, I'm well over the twos, of course. I'm prepping for a contest for Ireland, so.
Uh-huh.
214, 217. But, again, I'm coming down, so.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, just progressive over time, the weight piling on, and then the lean mass and the tissue gaining over the years. So
you look bigger than 214 to me. I mean, on just looking at you on your photos and like right now, I would think I would guess you're like a 250, 260.
No, physically impossible at any point in time on that. I've never been even close to those numbers.
How tall are you?
Highest, I think I'm 5'5".
Oh, okay. See, I couldn't tell. You know, by looking at your photos, I just thought you were that big. I mean, you look huge.
I mean, again, the illusion of size is what we play with, of course, and the muscle density and things like that will lend itself to that. So versus why the 212 guys are, I think, more of the game players, I guess, than you would with the open guys, because the 212 physiques and things like that are more attainable, if you will, by today's standards, by some of the shorter guys, if you will. They always like to put that into the shorter guys, you know. I'm like, okay, well, whatever makes you feel better.
Yeah.
It's no less the effort and everything else to get where we are.
Right. And, you know, I like talking to the guys, you know, I just did a podcast yesterday for the second time with Tony Pearson. I'm sure you heard of him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course I've been in the gym. How's the atmosphere, do you think, change? I mean, when I go to Gold's Gym now, compared to like it was back in the late 80s, the atmosphere is a lot different now compared to what it was. It used to be really a serious place to go into. And when I went back there lots of years later, just it got really soft. Let's just put it that way. In the gym that you're in, and how have you noticed how the industry has changed that way, or has it from your perspective?
No, it definitely 100% has changed, and it's unfortunate it's changed the way it has. Social media has killed a lot of people who have done a lot in the industry, and they're giving it to people that ain't worth shit and freaking are Insta. We call them Insta bros and Insta hoes. So, I mean, it's unfortunate, man. These are a bunch of people that haven't done a damn thing in the industry, but got like 2 freaking million followers. I'm like, how
seriously
is that even possible? I said, and I've got 12 titles, been on the Olympia stage freaking 15 consecutive damn times, and I'm only like at 135,000, but they much rather freaking follow some chick with her butt out.
Yeah.
And, or some other rail thin dude, you know, the skinny dudes with abs. It's like, they're everywhere. So it's like big fucking deal.
Yeah.
You know, and all they're doing is showing these simple ass exercises that anyone could do.
Yeah.
And you look at their count, and you're like, how in the shit is that possible?
Yeah.
So these are the unfortunate ones that are killing all the pro athletes who are trying to get endorsements and sponsorships, because these fools will go out there and do it for nothing.
Yep.
And get supplements and call themselves sponsored. I'm like, sponsorships is if you get paid.
Yeah.
If you get free supplements, you ain't sponsored. Because the free shit doesn't pay bills. So
you know,
because the companies know they'll get that, they'll do this.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad I'm not the only one that's as frustrated. You know, when I left the industry, I took 13 years or 14 years off. And then when I came back in, part of the reason was I started reading Google News, you know, and in every Google news, there's always these trainers that are there. And I said, what the fuck am I? I could tell by reading the article that they didn't know shit. And I just I was like, I can't even believe this. And just like what you're saying, then I got into, you know, the Instagram and all these followers. I'm thinking, how in the hell can that be? I call them social media stars, but they're like, They don't know shit.
No, well, yeah, and it's funny. It's like, man, you've got 4 million freaking followers, and I've never heard of you. I accidentally happened to stumble onto your shit from some other crap, and I'm like, then how are you even there? I don't get it, you know? Yeah. So
it's really weird, but that's just kind of the way it is, you know?
Yeah, like I said, it has killed endorsement deals for all of us, and it's unfortunate because no one wants to pay anymore. Everyone wants to get this free stuff, social media publicity. Whenever you try and get endorsement and deals, it's always, well, let's see your social media account and all this crap. I'm like, so you're just main concerned about the numbers versus anything.
Yeah.
You can still have the numbers up there. No one buys anything.
Right.
You know?
So what's your, you know, if there's a solution to this, you know, what would that be? Because I think, David, I think eventually, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just too damn optimistic, but I'm thinking that over time, you know, with all the shit that's out there, it'll swing back. You know what I mean? That's what I'm thinking.
It could.
I wonder if it really will, though.
You can't uninvent what's already out, unfortunately. And that's the thing I tell people. I say you can't uninvent what's already been invented. Unfortunately, it's play by the game or get run over.
Yeah.
Both in the industry and in business. You got business using social media to their advantage, as well as it can be a disadvantage too, because it spreads like wildfire. You know, one bad review and everybody can see it,
and right,
start flooding you and trashing you. You know, word of mouth no longer can really hurt you, but Google review can screw your shit right up.
Isn't that something? Know? Yeah, that's how it's changed.
So the gym atmosphere has changed because now, you know, yes, we as pros are doing it too, as well as most other people with their freaking cell phone. But I try not to do that if I'm training by myself, unless it's like I got to get a post in for the day or the week, yeah, or something like that. Then my phone will come out. Hey, man, can you catch a couple shots of me doing this? Whatever, done. But there's individuals in there, and they know who they are, probably listening to shit right now too, later on, be like, that's me. And own up to it. Take accountability. Yeah. You're the ones on there that are pissing us off with your freaking phone, standing by your girl trying to look all cool.
I know, man. I couldn't.
And she ain't doing shit.
Yeah.
Like, get out the way and go to freaking Planet Fitness.
It seriously, that is so true. It's really changed that way. I know, like when Tony is, because I asked him the same thing. He said, man, back then, he said all the pros were like in Venice, you know, Gold's Gym, Venice back then in those days.
Yep.
And he said, all the pros were in there. He said, and the camaraderie was amazing, and the atmosphere was just intense as hell. You know, these guys were all, they went to, when Rocky came out, he was telling a story. He said when the first Rocky came out, all the pros went together to watch the movie. I mean, it was that kind of, you know, you know, you were with them in the gym and you were competing, and that you competed against them as well. But the intensity was just a whole different animal. Where you train, is it a pretty hardcore gym?
You know where I train? It's a very good gym. There's a couple of them I train at, because I train my people at them as well. But one, not so much. It's more family oriented. It's still run by the same individual and still called the same name. But on the other end of the spectrum is the other location I'm at, and it's more hardcore. And you've got some good dudes in there that really put in some time and effort, you know, as well as you got your bros and your clowns in there at those different hours, of course, and all gyms have them.
Yeah.
That they kind of mess it up for the rest of them. But you know, overall, it's like information war while you're in there. It's what's unsettling. It's like if you're a trainer which I am a coach and prep trainer as well, you know, everybody's trying to get free shit and free information and they don't want to pay for it and stuff. Right. So they're constantly hawking and looking at you and stuff. So that's kind of irritating in the atmosphere that I'm in. Yeah. I'm sure it's probably the same for the rest of the guys out. So.
Yeah. So you're doing that. How many people do you, I'm assuming you're a personal trainer. Are you calling yourself more of a coach or are you a personal trainer?
I'm both.
Both. Okay.
I'm doing both, man. Yeah.
So how many clients do you have and do you are the gyms letting you go in and train them without consequence? And that, the reason why I'm asking that question, David, because when I first started, I didn't have a gym to go to. I have my own places now, but I didn't at that time. So my idea was to go to the local gyms wherever, when I found somebody that wanted to utilize my service, then I would just go there to their gym. And I talked to their front desk and I said, look, I'm bringing you a new client possibly. And if I do that, is it okay if I train them while I'm there?
Yeah.
There was no problem to do that at that time until I got busy. Then all of a sudden it was like, they started doing fucking math. They wanted to tap in. Then it started changing that way. And it got to the point where, they all started doing that. And I said, well, fuck. I said, I got a feeling, because I had a pretty good clientele at that point. I was traveling, I don't know, in a radius of maybe 15 or 20 miles to get this done. Yeah. When I started in my hometown in 82, there wasn't one personal trainer doing it here. In Fresno, yeah, Bakersfield, but especially LA and, San Francisco. But not in my town. I had to figure this thing out. In fact, people thought I was like an aerobics instructor, for fuck's sake. And they didn't know about personal trainers, So I had to go to other places and do this. But then I told the gyms, because I had a 4 or 5 in my area, finally. Took a while. I said, look, I got a feeling they're going to follow me if I leave. Well, that's exactly what happened. And that's actually, in some ways, it was a good thing because it forced me to open my own place. That's how I started. And actually, as you can find, it made me more efficient because people were coming to me instead of me chasing them around. Do you have any kind of consequence? The fact that you're a pro, I'm assuming that you're good for the business just being there, I would assume. But do you get any kind of flack for training clients in there?
Zero. No, I've known the gym owner for over 15 years, as long as I've known my wife. So he lets me train my people at any of his 8 locations if I want to. I train 2 mainly and stuff, 3rd every now and then, but no issues at all. It's already been talked about. Actually, he was the one asking me to start training people in the gym, so that's no issues. I'm not one of those dirtbag pros that go in there and thinking their stuff doesn't stink and slamming weights and making all kinds of racket and stuff. I'm actually trying to go in there and help people out. So there's a difference, you know what I mean?
I think it would be total upside for his business. I mean, it makes sense.
Oh yeah, most definitely. Yeah, everybody. I don't chase anyone down. I don't beg people for followers and clients either. Every one of my people have elected to find me, and they've come up to me and asked me, "Hey, I've seen what you're doing with so and so. I really like what's going on. Do you have room on your roster for another person?"
Yeah.
Hell yeah, man. And I do. And I just picked up 3 more that I've got, like, holy shit. Now I've got to freaking juggle my schedule because I've got multiples. You know what I mean? Most people do once a week. So lately now I've been getting these guys that want to go 2 and 3 days a week. I'm like, one, that's hella expensive.
Yeah.
2, hey, go for it. You're taking the place of 2 more people that I don't have to add to a list. By training multiple times a week, which is fantastic. So no complaints on my end.
Yeah. How many, if you don't mind me asking, do you do this, like, is it all one-on-one or do you do like group, like small groups? How do you do your personal training?
Nope. All one-on-one, bro.
Yeah. And let me tell you what, most, all of my stuff now is all small groups. When I say a small group, I mean 3 or 4 people in a group, because I tell you what happened when I started my business here in my area. There wasn't a market for me and I couldn't charge. I mean, when I got into LA and San Francisco area, because I opened places in San Francisco, I was charging, a lot more. But in my town at that time, I could only charge about $5 or $6 a session, believe it or not. So I had to figure out a way how to make money, because I've been in the business ever since then for 38 years. So what I figured out was to be able to bring in 2 or 3 people in a group and still make each one of those people doing their own routine. So it was personal to them, but I had to figure out how to do it in a group. That makes sense.
Okay.
And that's how I made up for, you know, I'm assuming, hell, you're making, obviously you're charging enough money that you can do it as a full-time business, because most people can't, David, they can't make a living at it. Most of them are doing it as a part-time thing. You know, it's like an actor in between gigs. You know,
no, I'm definitely doing it as a part-time, man. I don't train every day of the week. Not okay. At all. I'm fully retired military, so I've got my military pension. On that.
Okay.
So there's ain't got shit to worry about on that one.
Yeah.
The mortgage is covered, everything else on that part. So I work at a gun store as well. So I work at the gun store and I train. So those are my three incomes from that stuff.
Gotcha.
So,
and how many people, if you don't mind me asking, are you actually training now? Or can you train because of 12, your schedule, 12. Especially when you're competing like this?
Yeah, 12.
12?
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I've kind of been interested in, because I just can't believe some of the things that I'm hearing, is these guys that are doing online personal training.
Yeah.
Because you're doing that as well?
Yep.
And what kind of a clientele, what kind of a following do you have with that online training?
That is hard. Actually, that has been the hardest one that I've ventured out to do, because every single one of these knuckleheads will talk the talk, they'll apply and everything, and they'll send you emails back and forth, and you converse back and forth. And then when you throw out the freaking price sheet of what your rate is and shit, it immediately will shut them down. It stops. It's funny. Like, you reach out to them, hey, man, what'd you think about it? And all this other stuff. So we attack and get zero response. It's almost like they're too embarrassed that either they can't afford it, or they were thinking that you were some $99 cookie cutter copy and paste dude. I'm like, sorry, man, that's not what we're doing. And one guy even questioned the validity of if he was really going to be working with me. I was like, send me your phone number. I'll give you a freaking call.
Yeah.
I called his ass on the way home from work. I was like, hey, man. He goes, wow, you really called me. I was like, yeah. He goes, I've been screwed in the past, you know, paid a bunch of money to someone, and I was getting a ghostwriter or whatever. I'm like, that's not me, man. Yeah. I said, I don't want a lot of people for that reason. So that I could actually have hands-on, write your stuff out, do your plan. You send me my picks that I need every week and stuff, and go from there. It's definitely a hard thing to do. I'd rather do personal on one-on-one, because I get the biofeedback immediately.
You know? Right. No, I agree, because you know, I'm always looking, you know, as long as I'm not compromising quality, I'm always looking a way to be more efficient. And I talked to some of these guys, because I've been doing quite a bit of this podcasting now, and these guys are, and I don't know, I'm skeptical by nature. David, but some of these guys are like doing all this online training and with all these clients, and I don't get it, because I know from being in the gym inside working with clients, I understand how hard it is to keep those people accountable when they're coming to me face to face, you know? And I'm thinking, well, how in the fuck are you keeping these people accountable? And they tell me, well, you know, they do pigs, like what you're talking about. But I don't know. I have not been, I can't tell you, I've been real successful on that side of it. And yet it seems like, or maybe it's just an illusion, you know, that these guys are not doing as well and gals are not doing as well as they claim online in this online training. Cause it seems like everybody's doing it, or a lot more people are doing that now.
You make a good point, man. And I just saw this post, or just a statement made by somebody, and it seems like it's a true thing. It's like, it seems like every unemployed gym goer out there decides they want to be a freaking online or a personal trainer at some point. So that's why, and they not want to show, never done anything, have no idea about competing, basically regurgitating information that they were given on a first show and trying to train your clients. I get it. Everyone has to start somewhere, but start building some street cred, start practicing with some individuals first before you start calling yourself a prep coach and you look like you're a 12-year-old.
Oh, man, I tell you, it just
fucks sake. I see these guys out there, and I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? And the guys you're talking about that are doing I know personally an individual's got over 100 something plus clients, and I'm like,
online?
Well, yeah, right, exactly. So, and they happen to have IFBB in their name, and I'm like, are you fucking kidding? How do you keep track of that shit? And if so, you cannot tell me that you are not rehashing some shit for your other clients.
Yeah.
Period. You know what I mean?
I know.
So So when I hear people, well, they'll do it for me for this much, I'm like, well, fucking go to them.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna, be that guy that you're not gonna drag my name through the mud if your ass fails to make the progress that you want and stuff. So I've had a couple clients. My name is my bond, and my integrity is all you have left at the end of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I may or may not keep followers because I tell it like it is, and I may or may not gain clientele online, because I hold their asses accountable and I don't personally give a shit.
Well,
my personal in-person dudes and people, they know what's up. They know what I expect of them on a daily, on a weekly basis. I'm in their faces, you know, I'm giving them tough love when it needs to be, but I'm also giving them what they paid for too. Right. They're paying for the experience. They're paying for my knowledge. I have nothing to lose. I tell everybody, I have nothing to lose by telling you everything that I know. You're not on stage with me, so I don't care. I'll tell you whatever.
Yeah.
You know, if you were a competitor of mine, I'd be like, double middles, beat it, clown. you know, but if you're just regular Joe Blow, you know, I want to get my sexy back for the summertime.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm gonna pull out all kinds of tricks and help you out. You know what I mean? You just got to put in the work.
Yeah. I think you're smart in the approach that you're taking, because one of the things I learned with my studio, I still have one training studio, is that I make people pay up front because I want them to have skin in the game. You know, before they ever pay me, I do a 4-minute consultation. It used to be an hour, but I'm pretty good at giving consultations now because, you know, repetition is the mother of skill. And I've been doing this for so long. I know how to give a consultation to identify if that person is really serious or not. And I also know how to do that in a way that they know what I expect from them, which is what you're saying. And yeah. I tell them, I said, look, if you don't think that this is something that you can handle, you're in the wrong spot. And part of my job is to not only give you this fantastic information and put you on the right program, but it's also to tell you that you're at the wrong fucking spot at the moment.
Yeah.
You need
yeah.
to go across the street and pay $30 a month and fuck around. Because this is not that kind of a place, right? That's kind of what we're supposed
to do. No, and that's yeah, they can do that all they want, and they can go hire some beginner somewhere who've been, I call them paper trained.
Yeah, true.
I'm catching a bunch of shit for them. I was like, everybody's paper trained, but you know, the rubber meets the road. Do you have real life experience? Because everything that you're reading in black and white does not necessarily equal out in person.
Yeah.
That is just it's the human body. It's human nature. It's the evolution of everything that doesn't play out the same way. You learn just enough to pass an exam, like we all did. Wham, 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 to put, you know, PFT in your name or Esquire or doctorate or whatever else. But now you got to get that experience in there. You know,
yep.
Get that experience on the table. And because pretty much what we're doing is the guessing game. It really is. At the end of the day, we're guessing on stuff that should work. And, you know, you're going to figure out some things work better than others and things like that. It's not an exact science.
No. And, you know, the one thing that I wanted to do before I ever started, because I got into the bodybuilding side of it first. And when people started coming up to me and asking me a bunch of questions, you know, the light came on at that point, because I didn't really think that personal training in my area at that time. But I thought, you know what, there's just too many people coming up. I thought maybe I can do this. But one of the things that I wanted to do, it made me feel better, was to what you're saying. I wanted to learn this from firsthand experience. I wanted to be my guinea pig first, you know, before I went into this thing. And I knew that even with that being said, you know, you make mistakes regardless. But I mean, compared to somebody who's going, and I'm, you know, I was that guy too. I studied for a test, I passed it. And I'm smart enough to know at that point, because I was an athlete, I'm thinking, fuck, now I'm a personal trainer? No way. And these guys that are just passing to get a certification, you know, they're actually a danger to unsuspecting clients. And you know, this is part of the reason why I came back out again, to say, wait, fuck it. I can at least, you know, my part in this and still being relative in the industry is to at least talk up, even if it's not popular. But it was like, you know, I wanted to make sure that that client knew, you know, by the way that I was talking to them, and when I tell them, look, you're bound to feel this way or this way, and they knew, and that happened, that gave me credibility. And I thought that was really important. And it's even gotten to the point, David, because I have 200 clients in my gym it's all personal training. There's no open gym there. It's all supervised. And one of the things I started doing, because again, it's about accountability. So I started not only telling him, this is what I expect from you, I have him sign a good faith contract with me. Because I'm saying, as your trainer, here's what I'm going to do. It's both ways. But you need to sign this contract with me, because if you won't do that, you're not fucking serious. Because I'm not asking them to come in and kill themselves, you know, twice a day or 5 days a week. It's 3 days a week. It's 3 hours a week. You got to be able to give me that 3 hours a week and be consistent. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What ends up happening is that you end up getting a really good group of people that will work with you instead of these fly fucking by-nighters that come in and out. You know, they're one shot and they're gone. That's very frustrating. And it doesn't do any good. Like for me, because I've made a living at it, I gotta create something that's pretty steady, because I don't have other incomes, you know, that I can necessarily, count on. Yeah. So let me ask you this: when you're the clientele that you're dealing with, are you more specific to the bodybuilder? Are you training people that are for fitness? Do you do different kinds of athletes, or
what's your everything, main? Man? My main thing, I've got four solid competitors, so I beat their asses up pretty bad. Mm-hmm. They know it. They knew what to expect from day one on that, so yeah. I have no issues with that. And the others are regular individuals that want lifestyle changes and stuff. One guy wants to be treated like a competitor and stuff, despite, I'm like, okay, fine. So that would, I guess, it would count as five.
Yeah.
On that one. And the rest of them are just regular followers and stuff, and see me in the gym training and just want to make some serious physique changes.
Yeah. So my question to you, for the people that are there more for health and fitness, let's just call them that group.
Yep.
What is your approach with them? Like, do you say, look, this is how many days a week, for example, do you expect from them to be on your program if they're there for health and fitness?
I can't really expect them to be there, because one thing that happens that I'm seeing, and some people can see that, this is one of those industries where it's a luxury item.
Yeah.
For some people, it should be life and death, but it's a luxury item. So you're telling somebody, I'm paying you $80, $90, $100 an hour or a session to do this to me. But man, I tell you what, I've dropped a couple clients. I had not voluntarily, but they've had to drop because of finances. So when they can't afford that, the first thing that goes is start looking at things.
Mm-hmm.
They go, okay, well, personal training is not a necessity to them, not a necessity, right? So they'll drop that, boom, and they'll be like, sorry, man, you know, I got a lot of owed on taxes or whatever. So yeah. That'll be the case. And I'm like, you know what? You got to understand for that. You got to make room for that. And so what I try and do is plus up my individuals to account for the drop off. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So even though I say, man, I can only handle with my schedule 10 at a time, I actually got 12 to 13 to take accountability for right. the individuals that might fall off.
Right.
So I only expect them once a week, man, but my competitors, I want them twice a week.
Okay.
When it's time to compete, it's twice a week. Right now, nobody is prepping for anything, so I'm gonna take them once a week. And they've been, most of my guys, actually all of my guys have been with me well over a year, so they know what to expect. They know how to train. That if I take off to a contest, they're not gonna be a fish out of water. They know what's right. up. And it's fine. But when they pick a show and we dial their diet back X amount of weeks, I'll see them twice a week, mm-hmm. at a minimum. And we'll rotate between body parts and stuff. So we're not getting the same thing all the time, every day right. kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that's what I expect from them. For lifestyle people, change up their diet, give them some aha moments and stuff. While then there's stuff, some take home bits and things like that. Yeah. And they start making dramatic change, you know, and they start doing it. It passes on to their friends. Their friends look at you. Well, he's making progress. Can I get with that? Yes, you can. And then just snowball effect.
Yeah, you know, you were talking about in the beginning how some clients drop off just because you're more of a luxury as opposed to a necessity. And here's what I learned. It's funny that you're saying what you're saying, because I learned this in a different way. When I was charging $5 to $6 a session, that sounds pretty sick, doesn't it? To only charge that much per session. I know.
Well, again, I know what the cost of inflation and shit, man. Everything goes up. I've seen the price of gas during those times too. And I'm like, yeah, okay, so we're good.
Yeah. But here's what I learned. A couple of things that I learned was when I have people pay me after, in other words, I said, okay, here's what I'm going to charge. I would just wait and just, I did it by sessions. You can pay me after 12 sessions. But then what I've learned about that was people would drag me out a little bit before they pay me by the session. So I turned that into time. I said, look, you're paying for time now. This is based on, in my case, it's 3 times a week. Okay. And you've got 5 days basically to get 3 days in. Okay. So that improved. But then when I had them pay ahead of time, the psychology behind that was that then all of a sudden they're going, well, shit, I paid for this. I'm going to use it. So that helped them become more accountable. But here's what I learned about pricing is that as I started raising my prices, I became more of a something that was a necessity as opposed to something that was just a luxury. The demographic of people I had could afford me easier than that. I was like the first one to go, like when the dishwasher went out, when I was first training clients that could only afford to pay me $5 or session, right? Yeah. But I think what happens though, that there's a point of no, there's a point of no return, because if you get really high, I think maybe, you know, like with you, $100 is it $100 a session?
No, I'm not charging that. No, but I'm just saying, for example, my wife charges that.
Yeah. Because I know, you know, LA, these guys, Charles Glass and some guys like that, I think they're charging a lot of money. I mean, incredible amount of money. And I'm thinking, well, maybe there's a point where they just can't afford it because you're just too damn expensive. And maybe there's a little bit of a sweet spot, because now, which is still not a lot, but again, I make it up with groups, I charge around $20 a session now. And in my area, because it's a low.
20?
What's that?
You said 20 or 200?
No, 20. $20 a session. Oh,
okay. Yeah. Okay, I was like.
Yeah. All right. So it went from 5 to now 20. And people around here, it's something that, because I play with that price point a little bit. I get a little bit higher and it's like, you know, they start balking at it a little bit. But it's interesting that you said about the, but twice a week, that's interesting. Now, when I deal with clients, my program is, I have 3 components that I focus on: weight training, cardio, and nutrition. And I basically say that those 3 components are the main components that you need to implement and manipulate throughout a program. Do you get into that depth? Like, do you go into saying, okay, this is how we're going to do weight training? Do you have people doing cardio as a part of your program?
Everything, man. Everything. I put it all in there. Yep. I put it all in there. That's all part of it. If they're, and I don't charge separately or anything like that. I'm like, dude, if you're getting me even once a week, I'm going to do your diet. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna lay it all out. You know, you're gonna get a little shopping list and stuff and go and knock it out on that. I give them an example of days to prep food, Sundays and Wednesdays, because that's when I do my meal prep as well. So whatever they do, if they can get some help to do that. Their cardio schedule is all laid out as well, because if I'm only gotten them once a week, I want them to do some homework. I want them to be able to keep rock and rolling. I don't want them to just sit on their ass and just be like, thumb twiddle, twiddle, twiddle until I see Dave again. Right. You know, so. I give them all that. I don't see, again, any reason to hold back on that. I want them to get the value out of what they're paying me. I'm not exorbitantly high and not super low either. That's why the individuals are coming to me. They already know. So it's not like I have to tell them what the rate is.
Yeah,
they just still go per session. They know what's coming in.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the things I did when I was marketing, because I'm pretty good at doing outside marketing, newspaper, whatnot, although newspapers are dead in the water now. But one of the things I did back then was that nobody else was doing is I actually, in the ad that I wrote, I do like these 1-page ads in the newspaper and talking about my unique selling proposition, blah, blah, blah. But I always put the price there so they knew that coming in, because otherwise you get all these fucking tire kickers. You know, they call you up and they're just, you know, they're jerking you off basically. And so I learned that. Yeah. So that's kind of like with you, they already know coming in. You know, and what to expect. Yep. Okay, so let me switch over now to you, because I'm really interested in, there's so many different ways that guys train. You know, even though the physiology we're more the same than, in my opinion, I think we're more alike than not, because we're physiology, but there's so many ways that I've interviewing guys and gals that the way they train. So I'm really interested to know what your philosophy is for David Henry. And how you train, how many days a week, how long do you train, you know, that kind of thing. How many times a week do you train a body part, that kind of thing. So kind of what's your strategy? Just if you can walk me through that.
Oh, so, I mean, for me personally, my stuff right now is still, it's fortitude training. And again, it was an adaptation of a couple different genres of training styles, if you will. And it's by my personal, my coach, my friend, Scott Stevenson, Dr. Scott Stevenson. Mm-hmm. So he is now becoming well known for his philosophy on things and stuff. And I'm glad he's getting his due because, you know, all these other coaches and gurus around, I'm throwing little bunny ears out there that keep getting known for all their shit. I'm like, you guys don't understand. This dude has been in my corner for freaking 13 plus years. And what you're seeing is a result of him. I'm just following the plan and executing. Yeah. But he's the brainchild behind this.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
and this is what you're calling fortitude. Is that right? That's his
program. That's what he calls it. No, that's his program. It's for Dr. Scott. It's been published. He's got eBooks. He's got hardcover. He's got it on Amazon and he's traveling around the UK and stuff, doing the Fortitude Muscle Camps and stuff. So he's getting there.
So tell me what that exactly means, because I really don't know. I've heard that before, but I don't know exactly what that means. Can you tell us what that means, fortitude training?
So fortitude itself, just by virtue of what the name means, means you got to have guts to do the type of training, because it's a zigzag approach of training. There's tiers to it, tiers 1, 2, and 3. Three being the highest tier for those guys that have enhanced muscle recovery abilities. 1 and 2 for your beginner and then intermediate trainees, you know, usually with 6 months to a year for tier 1. Your consistent trainers for a year plus under their belt, hard, heavy training, tier 2. Then usually your pros and top amateurs will hit tier 3, such as myself. Mm-hmm. I'm on like tier 3 turbo. It rotates through like almost like a periodization, if you will.
Yeah.
So there'll be loading sets, usually 6 to 12 rep range with the heavy static weight that you're hitting, followed by pump sets. Pump sets usually around the 20 to 25 rep range for the other sections. So for example, Monday is my load training for legs, for lower body. So there'll be like 2 compound movements for quads, 1 single hammy movement, and then an overall another quad specific movement for that for your 6 to 12s. Mm-hmm. Then I'll touch upper body. So I still call it touch upper body. Your pump sets will be upper body. So you'll hit like a couple sets of pec deck, some side raises, a couple rounds of pull ups.
Yeah.
Things like that, that'll round out your training on that. Boom. You hit, then the next day or next time you hit the gym again, your load sets will now be, because these are the first 2 days, yeah, will be your upper body getting blitzed.
Gotcha.
Pump set, low section. So that'll be, for me, I like doing 100 rep leg extensions, as torturous as they are. Yeah. And that's pretty much it on that. Boom. And then I hit them calves and hamstrings as a touch upon there. Boom. Day of rest in between that. Third and fourth days will be what he calls muscle rounds. Muscle rounds are a 4x6. So 4 reps performed 6 times with 10 seconds rest in between each one. What it's designed to do is not overdrive the central nervous system. You're not trying to outdrive your ability to recover and recuperate, is what he pulled from DC training. So DC training was a logbook approach system of trying to beat the book every single time. Mm-hmm. And that was those kind of things were, that's where he didn't introduce me the first time. That's how we met. And that stuff would break you down. It totally break you down if you are not consistent with the program. If you think you're just, oh, there's something else new to try, because we got a bunch of trainers out there who like, trainees out there who like to pick the flavor of the week. And instead of sticking with one fucking program, these clowns are running around wanting to try the greatest thing that they think will put the greatest amount of muscle mass on them in the least amount of time. I'm like, everything works in concept. Everything works if you're willing to work. You can take any laid out program, that you want, the Weider blood flushing principles and all that other stuff. You can take rest, pause, you can take DC training, you can take fortitude, you can take the way Charles Glass trains, Y3T, FST7, all that shit works.
Yeah.
You just got to find your lane and stay in it that gives you the best results. To me, I've stuck with this because I have made the greatest results on that, and Scott's my dude, so I haven't jumped ship. So yeah, when he was in his beta phase of testing fortitude training back in Tucson, when I was back there 6-7 years ago, He was experimenting on himself like a rat. He was gauging rest times, recovery times. I was still doing DC, and I'm looking at him like, bro, what are you doing? He's like, I'll tell you when I'm done. And he'd be running around doing all this different stuff. And I'm like, what the fuck's he doing? So that's what it was based on. So then he came up with a secondary system. So Titan training on that. So the rest pause stuff approach on that was introduced in there. So, started doing that. And he's like, okay, I got to refine this better. I've got to get the rest periods down. I've got to get the timing and the intervals and stuff of how to incorporate the entire body over the course of 4 days and not make you feel like you've been rolled over by a truck.
Yeah.
You know, so when he's done that, so days 3 and 4, as I was getting to, I guess, are the 4x6 muscle rounds. Your 4x6 muscle rounds, your four reps, 10 seconds rest in between, and pretty much that's not enough time to really get your breath. And that's where your fortitude comes in, because right. It takes a lot of guts to do that because you're winded doing whatever it is.
Right.
No, it's not suited for free weights. Mainly it's mainly suited for people who can train by themselves, who have the ability to pull a pin or at least pull a plate themselves, that kind of stuff.
Are you talking about muscle rounds themselves, or are you talking in general? I mean, I would assume that
training in general.
Just training in general. It's more a machine than free weight.
Well, because if you were going to try and do, you can do load sets, because your loading sets can be a compound movement free weight, if you will. So you can do squats, bent over rows, things like that with that, because all you're doing is static weight, straight sets. You get at least a minute and a half to 2 minutes of rest in between.
Yeah.
If you try to do bent over rows with 4x6,
yeah.
It has been done, but it's really, really tough to do.
It is. I wanted to go back to, you made a comment about the how you train lower body with the load sets, and then you would train the upper body with higher reps. Right. And did he give you, or is there a reason, do they call that something? Because when you tell me that, I immediately go into the cross-training effect, that there's, on the lower end, you're hitting heavier weight, lower volume. But then when you do the high volume for your upper body in this case, and of course it applies to when you're doing the upper body heavy and lower body more a lighter weight, you get a cross training effect when you do that. I just wondered if that was the reason why that program was built like that.
Again, I'm not the inventor or proprietor of it, and I don't think that was his mentality behind that.
Yeah.
But he basically wanted to get away of how do you still engage the muscle activation without directly blitzing it.
Yeah.
Again, not directly having you broken by the time you get to hitting something else. So, for example, today, Wednesday, was my muscle round day, for a quad. So I did my 4x6 on some banded leg presses and things like that. Same with seated hammies, things like that. So for that particular stuff, calf raises, everything, touched upper body. Did my little round of world pull up set. Did some delts. Did some real quick chest pump out of the gym.
How long are your training sessions?
Usually around hour 15 or so, or hour and a half if I get interrupted to help somebody do something and things like that. It's just by virtue of what I do. So yeah. I'm trying not to be that guy where I just shut everybody down and stuff. I'm in that gym so often now that my clients sometimes are in there off my days and stuff when they're training, and they got coach. Yeah. So I was like, here we go. So I got to pull off my headphones and help the dudes out.
Yeah.
But they know, by and large, they know I'm training. I'm zoned in, especially I'm prepping right now for Ireland. So not to be dicking with me here with stuff.
I think what you should do, I'm fucking around with you right now. I think what you should do when you're in that mode is wear like a beanie that's like red or something that tells them, it's kind of like when I'm in my office, when the fucking door is locked and the shades are pulled, don't knock on the fucking door. I'm busy.
I don't guy sister need on my stuff, man. I can't put the hoodie on and be like, shut the world off. I know he does that a lot and stuff, but that's my man though. He's a boy, he's a good dude. But that's him shutting the world off. I mean, I've got a hat on. I mean, I'm always wearing a hat. and stuff. And unfortunately, I tend to make eye contact. I can't put blinders on.
Yeah, I know.
Walmart, I'd like to. And
yeah, I'm messing around with you on that. But I think it'd be
I help everybody out, man. I help everybody that I can and stuff. And but they all know that because I'm in such a fixture in there Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays that they know when I'm training for stuff because they can see the change in my body.
Oh, and then your mind, probably your eyes, for fuck's sake. I mean, when I was in that mode, I changed and I trained with Platts. You know who Tom Platts is?
Oh yeah, almost
done. Yeah. Have you ever trained with him? Even one set?
Yeah, in Arizona.
Yeah, and he was a wild man, and I could when I trained with him, I could see it in his eyes when that shit was getting real. You know, it was that he was that strong-minded. But how many times a week are you training each body part, or do you have a set system?
Everything is hit at least twice a week.
Twice a week.
Again, at various intervals.
Yeah, you know, when I was in the 80s, I was very fortunate that I got to travel to Eastern Europe, Bulgaria, Russia, Czechoslovakia back then. Okay, those guys were Bulgaria was known, and those guys were known for Olympic lifting, but they had all this information, David, for how to grow muscle. They just didn't apply it because the weightlifters in those days were rock stars, and bodybuilders not so much at all. You know, the weightlifters got to travel and they were like the big guys on campus. One of the things that the Bulgarians proved was that there's no such thing as overtraining if you don't overtrain the body to begin with. And they believed that, sure, based on your physiology, that training an hour or an hour and a half, like what you're talking about. Listen, Tony Pearson trains even longer than that, and you guys get these fantastic results. But they said,
yeah,
if you train 30 to 45 minutes, that's ideal based on how your physiology starts. It starts slightly becoming overtrained as you go get into that hour. And they said, so there's no such thing as overtraining if you keep it really tight sessions like that. I thought that was interesting. That's the way I train, you know? And what that automatically...
If I could train a lot, but I would do that too, man, but dang.
Yeah, it sounds like it's difficult, especially like if you're trying to help people, you know?
I can get my stuff done in a matter of 45 minutes, and I have when there was nobody in it. But by and large, I like to stretch it out and make sure I'm just being a good dude in the gym all around.
That's fair.
That's my home, man, at this present time and stuff. And I don't want to be the guy that's unapproachable because I was known for that initially and stuff. But when word started getting around that I'm not that dude, that's where I started picking up more of my clients, man. So that's cool.
No, that's good. How about what's your philosophy in general? And maybe your doctor that works with you on your nutrition. What is your philosophy as far as protein intake?
Usually 1.1 to 1.2 grams per pound of body weight.
Okay.
If you're in a moderate level of training and stuff, probably a little higher if you're doing extreme things, you know, like you want to be like a CrossFit or something like that, a little more, something that's a little more intensive on its activity.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And I tend to agree with you on that too, by the way. The Bulgarians thought that you should take anywhere. Of course, they were doing this Olympic style lifting. They ate a high fat diet they fed their athletes a high fat diet. And they said that they needed to take in between 3 and 4 grams for 1 pound of body weight. It was that high because of the load that they're putting on their system all the time, you know? So that,
yeah,
I think
yeah.
that makes sense with what you're saying. What about like, you know, I saw a program the other day that I almost had a shit fit over it. It was on Netflix. It was called The Game Changer, I think it was called.
I'm not watching that horse shit. And I tell you why.
I know why, but tell me why.
The reason why I will not watch that crap and I'm telling people why I will not watch it is because I'm a carnivore.
Yeah.
Period. I'm a Texan. I love my meat, my steaks and all this stuff. And what I find really foul though about a lot of these kinds of things that like to bring light to whatever, I hunt. So ethically, you know, hunting and stuff, and people may not agree with it. Fine. If you're not, be a vegan. But if you're not, and you want to be a hypocritic, narcissistic fuck, get out of my face. Because if you're telling me that your meat comes from the grocery store, is humanely slaughtered, you got your head in the sand.
Yeah.
you might want to watch a couple more documentaries that I can point you to and stuff. And
I'll tell you in a nutshell, you don't have to watch the damn thing, so it'll really irritate you. The fucking thing is skewed to the max. It was brutal, you know. And they had Arnold. They, you know, they brought some of these guys. They ran some guys out there, you know, that to try to lend credibility. I said, this is bullshit. You know, fuck me. I was just curious. That's all. I wanted to get you riled up to see if you saw that
one. No, man, I'm not gonna watch any stuff that's gonna try my mindset on eating. Yeah. I'm like, I know there's some shady stuff out there and stuff, and it's been happening for years. Yeah. But just like our drug problem and stuff, no one's really gonna do something about it, are they? They're gonna say they are just so they're making progress so they can keep the money flowing in.
Yeah.
If you really want to stop stuff, you can. But not going to.
You know, I thought it was a little bit entertaining, but it was mostly flawed and skewed. And but you know, listen, it's kind of like the personal trainer that you know, that has a paper certificate going out to an unsuspecting client. It's the same fucking thing, because I believe that, you know, I believe everything you're feeding me. Sure, that sounds good. Let me go eat a bunch of fucking plants. Okay, whatever.
I wouldn't do that to people, man. If they are vegan, and again, you know, no disrespect, or I don't particularly care for the individuals that like to push their lifestyles on others. That's right. Where you'll piss me off.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you? I do me. Don't you start talking shit about the way I do stuff, I'm gonna blast you for what you do. So it's so stay in your lane, get an STFU, and beat it. If you like doing that kind of stuff, then most definitely go for it. You know, if you feel better on it, then cool. But my blood work says otherwise. My HDL, LDL, and total cholesterol levels are low. For as much red meat as I eat, I think my last blood test, it was a 151 for my total cholesterol.
I'll tell you why that is. Maybe you already know. Is that 23% of red meat, the saturated fat, is a linoleic acid. And that's considered a good fat. Then most people don't know that, but you're right. 100% right. I did a, back in the day, I did the anabolic diet, which is Mauro Di Pasquale. I don't know if you've heard of that guy.
I remember that. Yeah.
Okay. And that was the stuff that I did with him back then. And it's a proven fact that you put somebody on a high fat diet, the cholesterol would drop 50 points, you know? Mm-hmm. So the real problem comes in people that are eating too many carbohydrates, because your body can't store it, and it stores it over as a triglyceride. There is where you potentially have the problem. You know, it's all fucked up and backwards as to it's counterintuitive. And I could understand how people could think that, but it's so misguided, you know, but whatever. I mean, listen, all I can do and on my end is just say what I think, and that I think is true. And if you like that, fine. If not, that's fine too. You know, I'm in the industry to, you know, I still love this game as much as I did when I first started, David. And I can tell that you have a lot of passion. You have some strong conviction. I like that, because too many out there don't. And it's a big disservice to the industry. And it, like you said, you know, you got guys out there and ladies out there that are doing stuff with these endorsements that are impacting the guys that should be, you know, getting the endorsements in a negative way. And I have a problem with that, you know, but I guess that's just my own problem. You know, I can bitch about it, and I will. And that's part of the reason why, that's part of the reason why I'm doing podcasting. You know, that's my way of sort of getting back in and saying, I keep asking myself, how am I relevant now? Or do I even want to be? And because of the fact that I still have love for the game, you know, it's hard. If you can think about you having love for something, you care about that shit. But you just want to try to correct and at least think that you're putting people on the right path. But then that's also subjective as well, I guess, at the end of the day.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, I'm not, if we cared a lot about what everybody thought about things, man, that's part of our problem too, with what's going on in society. We care too much about what other people think. Start doing you and you'll be happier. You know what I mean? As long as you're not hurting anybody else or directly family members and stuff like that, but you're happy and going your own path, I think that's should be totally acceptable and fine. You don't have to like everything people are doing.
No,
it's not you. That's fine.
And that's
like,
okay.
I don't have to like everybody, but you can be cordial and accepting of, hey, they're doing what they want to do without having to blast them for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like social media has given a lot of people balls where they didn't have balls before.
yeah,
and to talk shit behind the screen. Nicole, I have not met one time, bro. One time, I've not met one individual who says some dumb shit on my freaking IG page in person. Not one.
I've called them out, you know, so many times. I'd like to meet you. Hey, I used to get some shit in the mail that was just mind-blowing. These guys are, you know, because I had a strong opinion. I wrote a bunch of training courses. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You should have seen some damn mail I got. And I thought, these are some fucking wackos out there, but I want to meet them. I would say, come on, let's meet. I want to see who's making. No one. Crickets.
Not one, man. Crickets. I was like, you guys, I'm not hard to find. Yeah. You know where I train.
Crickets. No, I didn't hey. Mean. I'm curious to know, you like guns. So tell me, I know it sounds like you're a hunter. I guess, is there anything in particular that you like to hunt, or do you like to hunt everything?
Just venison, man. Just for game meat, deer is all. I mean, that's really the extent of it. You know, I don't know, pheasant or geese or duck or any of that stuff. I'd like to, that'd be kind of cool. You know, but mainly just, it's fill the freezer, not trophy hunting.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Now, management wise, because it's also about management. You know, where I had my first duty station in Ellsworth, South Dakota, the deer population was so high they almost allowed year-round hunting because the deer were causing so much traffic accidents and holy killing shit. People that they had to bring the population down.
Wow.
So like you go up in the Black Hills, and the Black Hills, a lot of those roads didn't have guardrails on the side. So if you look down the side, you're back and you're down in the ravine, like 200-300 feet down. So if a deer crosses someone's path, what's the first thing you do?
Yeah, swerve.
Yeah. Correct. Swerve. Yeah. down the embankment, right? So so a lot of that's part of management. You really literally have to thin the herd and stuff. And people can't wrap their head around that kind of fact that that's what's happening, especially like wild hogs and pigs and stuff like that. Tearing up Texas, man. Tearing up Texas, Louisiana, a lot of those other lower states where these things are just, they multiply so fast that they're just now exterminating them, man. I mean, and a lot of hunters for home.
You might get a kick out of this, or maybe not. In California, this is California.
Yeah.
Where I used to live, they would not build on a fucking property because of a, like some bug that was indigenous or something. They had to do this, you know, this big study on, because they didn't want to fuck up their little environment out there. Apparently, that they could. They held building up because of this little fucking creature. I mean, I like animals. Don't get me wrong. You know, this
was a bug.
It's like some kind of a bug or something. They had to do this study. I'm thinking, like, you gotta be shitting me, but it's true. That's California.
Oh my God.
It's kind of California in a nutshell. You know. Fruits and vegetables, yeah, maybe. Yeah. Hey, you know, I would be like really into hunting, David. But the only problem is I don't like walking that far. I assume that part of the enjoyment that you get out of this is tracking the bastards, right?
Well, no, sitting in tree stands usually can get quite boring. So you have your phone with you and you're playing some games until you hear something go by, or sitting in a blind down low. Usually the spot and stalk stuff is reserved for like during warmer months and stuff where you're not freezing your butt off and stuff like that, where you just don't get warmer and things, or open grasslands, prairies, stuff like that, when they hunt antelope and things that I've been a part of and stuff. No, I don't like walking a lot either like that, and hiking up and down freaking hills carrying a 6 and 7 pound rifle in your back.
Yeah.
After a while, that shit gets heavy.
Can you take an assistant with you? Like, you carry this for me.
Yeah, well, you should always hunt with a partner. Yeah. Always, man, because there's plenty of accidentals happening out there. And I tell people, I said, I've seen that movie.
Oh.
See this?
Yeah.
Yeah. I ain't going to be the only black guy to go in the woods and not come back. So.
Oh, God. Hey, so, listen. That's pretty funny. Do you hunt like a couple times a year, once a year? I try and go
once a year, man. I haven't been this year at all, but I like going out to my man Andy Steiner out in Burn, Indiana, and stay with him because he's got 40 acres of land out there.
Okay.
And stuff, and he can get deer all along, and I got local people too, man. They'll go and they'll hunt if I can't get out, and they'll bring me stuff and things, so that's kind of cool. Guy Sistanino, he and his dad do a processing down in his area in New Jersey and stuff, and so I might get a hold of him and be like, hey, hook a dude up.
Yeah, nice.
So
Hey, well, listen, man, we'll wrap this thing up, and I just want to let you know, I really appreciate you coming on the show. I think you're a great looking bodybuilder, and I like now that I've gotten to know you a little bit more, I like you. I think you're the real deal. I like talking to people that just talk straight and have some strong beliefs, there's a difference between somebody who has a strong belief where they think that their way is the only way, and you're not that guy, you know? No. And I like that. I think and part of my thing is, like I said, when I came back, I wanted to find out what the hell was going on out there. And you're somebody that's really great for the sport. And I think you know that. And I know that. I can tell right off the bat that, you belong and people need to come see you to get some really good information, man. So I do appreciate you coming awesome. On. And I hope that you're in Ireland. The competition, is this IFBB?
Yeah. This is the Muscle Contest Ireland is thrown by Tamer Gundy and his brother TK. Every year here. I won in 2018, didn't do it in 2019. So that was Sammy Haddad. So he and I will be
clashing.
Battling heads here.
Yeah.
Let's see who's going to be the defending champion on that. I beat him the first time I was there. I was like, so the only reason why you won, bro, is because I was there last time. So we're just going to go ahead and say that.
Yeah. Hey, before we go, is there anything that you would like to promote on our show or like a website that people can come see you or anything like that?
No, just if people have information or want to, my online stuff is davidhenrytraining.com for my online coaching. Or they can go to dhenrypro.com for my online store and they can see all the stuff in there. Or they can find me on IG at davidhenry_IFBBPro there. I'm currently sponsored by Earth Nutri. This is my second year with them. So when you guys see some of the videos that I'm posting, stuff like that, you see the little circle emblem and stuff for Earth Nutri patch. That's who I'm sponsored by. So,
okay.
That's it on that. I love what I'm doing. I have no plans to stop currently at present time, but my time is coming, man. I see the writing on the wall, and it looks like the Olympia doesn't like me much, but I'm gonna be there, give it another shot this year and see what we got, man. We'll make evaluations from there,
How old are you now? Don't mind me asking.
I'm 44. I'll be 40. Oh shit! I'll be 45 this month.
Oh boy, it sneaks up on you. Let me tell you something.
The 24th, man. I'll be 45, man. Yeah. I turned pro at 27.
I had an old timer tell me one time. I've heard just about everything. I thought, and this old timer, he was a client of mine. He was 86 at the time or 90s. He's up there, and he said, Leo. He said, life was like a roll of toilet paper. And I'd never heard this one before, Have you heard this before?
No.
He goes, life is like a roll of toilet paper. He said, the closer that it gets to the end, the faster it goes. And he was right spot on because David, I'm 65 now and I can't fucking believe how I got here so fast. And then it makes me think, if I got here this fast, because I get like this stupid shit enters my head. Okay, so the average lifespan for us, for guys like us now, or guys, is like something like 78. Okay, do the math. Yeah. If I got this fast to 65, I'm fucking dead right now. I don't even know it.
You got 13 years to be kicking down. It's like, what the hell? All right.
Seriously. Anyway.
Yeah, no, listen. No, it scares me, man, but I'll be all right.
That's reality. It's just, it is what it is. Fuck it. I live in the moment now more than ever. And I'm good with that. I love what I do like you do. And I'm enjoying my shit right now more than ever. Davis, that's the good news, So again, I really appreciate you taking the time to come visit, and I'll be looking for your win in Ireland.
April 11th is supposed to be the date on that, I think, and so look for me to do that. We're still coordinating on getting that out there, but right now I'm prepping like I'm hitting it,
Yeah, well, you look good behind those clothes, man. You take care of yourself, okay?
Appreciate it, man. Thanks so much.
Okay, take care. Bye.
All right, man. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.